only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Kick behind the line and drop.
Bang.
The pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
I thought it was a jump ball. Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Anita Marks with you. Thank you for joining us, the first of 2 hour shows at the Combine today, Thursday, and Friday. And we're going to get right to it right off the top, Anita. And we're joined by Steve Palazzola, one of our good friends from Pro Football Focus, one of their analysts. And Steve basically has watched nearly every one of these prospects multiple games, so there's no better guy to give us a good preview of what we're going to see here at the Combine. Steve, give us your overall thumbnail here to start of what fans should be looking for from this draft class in terms of where there are strengths and where there are weaknesses.
Yeah, I think the first thing to look at is the top of the draft. It feels like there's 5, 6, maybe 7 elite type players, and then when I'm putting together my big board mock draft, very difficult to figure out 8 through 20, 25. There's a lot of players that you can slot in there. So I think that's going to be scheme-based. Every board's going to be a little different. A bunch of elite players, and then a lot of players that can go any which way, especially on the interior defensive line, one of the strongest position groups in the entire draft.
You know, I find it interesting. Obviously, you do a lot of work. You watch a lot of game film. You sit there with a number of people, I'm sure, you know, anticipate which players are going to go where and how they're going to fall. But isn't it hard sometimes to assess that, knowing that there's some teams that value best player on the board, and there's some teams that value not only best player but also need? So how much, when you're kind of assessing where you think certain guys are going to go, how much thought process is put into that, or the inside knowledge of how an organization thinks?
Yeah, it's a great question. If you look at what the Giants have done through the years, always seemingly grabbing the best player, and other teams always seem to just kind of fill out their roster from a need standpoint. When we do our mock drafts, we try to do it from what if we were the GM, and kind of get away from the trends that the teams have had. And the, you know, the goal there is to say, look, this is who we think is the best player for this team at that spot. And I think there's value in at least, you know, seeing what's going to be available and where we value those players. So I think it's easier for us to just say, this is what we think of the player, rather than trying to get into the team's head and predict.
Well, Steve, I think we should start where you began. You said there were a handful of guys in this draft that you think are truly elite,
yep,
that you believe are the cream of the crop. Who are they?
Well, it starts with Joey Bosa from Ohio State. We think he's the best edge rusher in the entire draft. Great run stopper. He can get after the passer. DeForest Buckner from Oregon. 3-4 defensive end type, but interior disruptor. We love Jared Goff at QB. You know, I think there's different opinions around the league. Hand size is going to be a big issue for him this week. That's the big story. But we think he's a top-notch player. Miles Jack from UCLA. We continue to move up our board the more we watch him. Linebacker. And then you got Laramie Tunsil from Ole Miss. Offensive tackle, that classic left tackle prospect. And the last guy I think I really like is Jalen Ramsey from Florida State. Versatile, can play some corner, can play some safety. But I look at those six players, I feel pretty comfortable with them at the top, and then it's just wide open after that.
And I imagine Jalen Smith would be in that group if his knee was healthy, correct?
Yeah, he's close there. I'd say he's probably more of a top 10 to 15 talent.
Interesting.
Even when healthy, the difference between him and Miles Jack, they're both extremely athletic. They both bring so much coverage ability to a defense. But Miles Jack will play the run a little bit better than Jalen Smith, who's more of a, you know, run to the ball type of linebacker, not really going to take on blocks.
So, I mean, like you said, really a lot of talent coming out, especially in the first round on the defensive side of the ball. But some of these guys coming off of knee injuries, knee situations, which actually, you know, whatever organization, their medical staff is going to play a really big role, I would imagine, especially some of the linebackers. But also, you've got some top-notch talent that unfortunately has had some off-the-field issues. You know, and so what comes into play, obviously, is the interviews that are going to be taking place at night, right? Kind of take us there and what, who's interviewing these guys? I understand that there's a few organizations that bring in, like, psychologists and stuff like that. Where would you value the interview process and getting to know a lot of these players who, again, have some off-the-field issues compared to the 40 and the cone and the vertical and all that?
It's another great question where I think, you know, we don't get that information, so it's hard for us to put that into our evaluations. But for teams, it's huge. I mean, I talked to a personnel director last night who said, you know, we can essentially take one character risk per draft. So, you know, we took one, and there was another guy that we really wanted to draft, but we couldn't draft him because you can't have, you know, a bunch of guys essentially becoming busts. So I think teams, you know, the stuff that goes on at the hotels, those one-on-one interviews, Noah Spence from Ohio State's a perfect example. He's a top 10 talent edge rusher in a class that doesn't have a lot of explosive edge rushers that can do what he does. He got kicked out of Ohio State. And again, as another evaluator told me, you got to earn that to get kicked out of Ohio State. You know, it's not just a one-strike thing over there. It's over and over and over again. He screwed up. So he has to answer those questions at the hotel. And to be honest, it only takes five teams to keep him on the board for him to become a first-round pick. But it is a huge part of the process, and every team treats it a little differently.
Now, the interviews are important for him. You mentioned Jared Goff, the measurements on the hand size. What other players are you really focusing on the next few days in terms of either measurements or performance that you think could really significantly alter what teams think of them after they've seen them obviously play on tape all year in college sports?
Yeah, one of the guys is Jason Spriggs from Indiana, offensive tackle. And, you know, I'm not huge on the offensive tackle class beyond Laramie Tunsil, Ronnie Stanley, and maybe Jack Conklin from Michigan State. But Spriggs graded well for us. He's a good player at Indiana, and they think, and people seem to think, that he's going to run a good 40, do well in his agility drills, and have a Lane Johnson type of combine. If you remember Lane Johnson a few years ago with the Eagles, was the best athlete amongst all offensive tackles here. People are expecting Spriggs to do that and either become a late first round or even middle of the first round type of player, because the tackle position always seems to get pushed up in the draft. So I look at Spriggs as a guy that's going to quote-unquote win the week. And then maybe a guy like Will Fuller from Notre Dame, who you know, might be a one-trick pony type of wide receiver. He can get deep, get behind defenses. He might be the most explosive receiver in the draft. Not the best, most polished receiver, but if he runs in the 4.3s, some team's going to maybe love him at the back end of the first or into the second round.
You know, you first of all, in regard to Goff, for those that are watching, what came out in regard to his hand? Measurements too small, too concerned, so therefore maybe some concerns going to a team that has to deal with bad weather. That's a big concern with him now?
It's bad weather plus fumbles. And, you know, the hand size thing, I laugh at it, but there might be some merit to it. Teams generally have a cutoff, whether it's the 9-inch hands or whatever their cutoff is, and they say if there's anything below that, these guys tend to have fumble issues and perhaps that bad weather. You know, can you throw the ball in bad weather? And if you look at Goff, he doesn't have a great arm. It's not a cannon. The thing I love about him is pocket presence, and he fires through his reads, and he does a lot of good quarterbacking things. But from a physical standpoint, doesn't have a great arm. So they kind of tie that to hand size a little bit. Plus, he's had games where he's had a number of fumbles, and I think those are the types of things that scare NFL teams when you talk about the measurements.
You know, Kurt Warner had very, very small hands. That was a big reason why you saw him have success in St. Louis with the Rams, because he played indoors.
And he also wore that glove, too.
And then of course, playing in Arizona, where they really could control things. But and I wanted to bring up the quarterback situation, because typically, you know, whenever we see trades happen during the draft, it's because, you know, teams are, you know, they covet that quarterback or that one skilled position player. It seems to me, in talking to you and, of course, doing the research that we have, that it's more defensive-oriented. There's a lot more explosiveness and excitement and talent coming out on the defensive side of the ball. So are you anticipating teams that are in need of big-time defensive players to maybe make a move up? I mean, do you see any trading going on as we get, you know, as when the draft starts?
I would say the trading is going to go, it's going to be more QB-centric. If somebody does love Goff and they have to move up and get him, I think they make a move. If someone loves Wentz, and Wentz can wow you with his arm and his, you know, it's Carson Wentz, North Dakota State, huge arm, athleticism, so much upside, so much to go. I think it's going to be, if someone loves those QBs, they'll go get him. From a defensive standpoint, we've been debating this internally. It's almost to the point where there's so much defensive talent.
You can wait, right?
Right. Do you want to move up, or do you wait and say, you know what, we're still going to get a good player? If you need an interior defensive lineman, I call it, it's like 32 flavors. You can get any type of defensive tackle or five technique or 3-4 defensive end, whatever you want to call it. there are so many of them available in the draft, you might be able to wait, and there's going to be good interior defensive linemen going in the second and third round.
You know, and I think as you focus in on the Giants at 10, they'll be in that situation. They'll have a choice of a number of different types of defensive player, whether you're talking about, you know, Jalen Smith, the linebacker, assuming Miles Jack is gone. Do you like Reggie Ragland from Alabama? You have the Ohio State kid that runs around. Then you have the defensive lineman. Give me a handful of players that you think could be in play at 10 on the defensive side of the ball, if you think that's where the Giants would focus, which I think is obvious based on what happened last year, and some guys that fans should keep an eye on this weekend that you think could be a target for the Giants at 10.
Yeah, I think given, you know, the fact that they need defense and that's the strength of the draft, starting at defensive end, there's Noah Spence, again, with the off-field stuff, if all of that, you know, checks out, so to speak. He's a guy, one of the best edge rushers in the draft. Shaq Lawson from Clemson, not as explosive, but a good run stopper, kind of style-wise a little bit like JPP, so he might be a guy that the Giants could look at. Defensive interior, there's a guy named Andrew Billings from Baylor who's probably going to bench, you know, 40 reps or something this week and blow some people away from a strength standpoint, but there's a number of different nose tackle options there. I don't know if Billings would be great at that there. And then if the Giants get away from their old linebacker, you know, preset measurements where they need a guy that's 6'4", 250. If they're willing to go beyond that, Jalen Smith, Miles Jack, if he's there. You know, you mentioned Ragland. I don't love Ragland that high, but he's a solid overall player. I think they might be able to get a guy named Scooby Wright from Arizona in the second round who's more of a run stopper type of guy. But if Miles Jack or Jalen Smith is there, the Giants have never really invested in that linebacker core from an athleticism standpoint. That would be a huge change for them, and it may be a welcomed one because the linebackers have been you know, pretty much the weak spot on that defense for a few years now.
Where do you think Jack and Smith fit in a 4-3 defense? Are they best outside? Can Jack move into that middle linebacker spot? Is he physical enough? How do you see them fitting in a 4-3 defense?
Yeah, so I look at Jalen Smith as more of the weak side guy that needs to be kept clean. But, man, when he runs to the ball, he is so quick, accelerates, he's so fast. Miles Jack, I think, could play outside or inside. I like him as a run-to-the-ball type of guy. He has that similar type of athleticism. He had our top coverage grade at PFF last year in 2014 when he played the full season. And then he came in 2015 and showed that he can take on blockers. And I think he could play that middle linebacker role because he is not afraid of contact. He gets in there, and he's going to be develop as a run-stopping type of player. I think he could develop into one of the better three-down linebackers in the entire league. And to be honest, in the league now, I think a three-down linebacker is more valuable than ever because
look at the Broncos last year.
The best teams have the great linebackers. Luke Kuechly, the Broncos, the Patriots have two of them. The best defenses have a guy that can stay out there on third down, rush the passer, play coverage, play the run. So I think Jack and Jalen, those guys, their value is higher than ever.
All right, so we talked about possibly trading up. What about because if you're a team like the Giants whose main focus is defense and knowing that there's so much talent out there, maybe when you get to that 10th pick, you look across your board and you value your 10th through, let's say, 13 or your 10th through 15 because there's so much talent, do you think we're going to see a lot of trading down?
I think teams want to. I think what we've seen, I've always been a fan of the trade down. I'm a big fan of get as many picks as you can. You might not hit on everybody, but if you bring in, you know, 10 players instead of 7, you've got better odds. I'm a big fan of the trade down, especially in this draft. Like I said, it's easy to maybe find those 5-6 players at the top, but the next group of players, if you can get more picks, you're going to get a good player whether you're drafting at 10 or drafting at 15 or drafting at 20. So I'm a big fan of moving down, accumulate more picks, and add more depth to the roster.
We're joined by Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus, John Schmelk, Nina Marks. Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Steve, I know DeForest Buckner is a favorite of you guys over at Pro Football Focus, but does he fit in a 4-3 defense?
It's not his ideal fit. I mean, when he played at Oregon, he played head up over the tackle quite a bit, so that's more of a 3-4 type of look. I love when he lines up head up because he's 6'7", but he can play low. He can move people in the running game. He gets double teams. He's not great, but he is a disruptor in the running game. Can he play a little bit of that? The
three technique.
In the 4-3, he could play a little bit. Could he play off the edge? Not ideal. I think you rush him off the edge every now and again to just use his unique length and size, but I think a 3-4 team is probably his best fit.
Given his body type, is Chris Canty a good compare, where he was a 3-4 D tackle with Dallas and he came to the Giants and he did play that three technique a little bit?
Yeah, Canty's one I hadn't thought of before, but now that you mention it, he is a guy that did similar role. The guy we've come up with is Calais Campbell from Arizona.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Similar size, probably not as Buckner's probably not as strong as Campbell, but they win and lose the same way. They get high, you know, they're 6'7", and they get pushed off the ball a little bit, but they also make a lot of plays.
Is there going to be one guy that just might fall kind of like what we saw with Williams and the Jets last year, right? And you're watching him fall, and you're like, somebody's got to take this guy now. Is that Buckner for you guys?
I think it's either Buckner or Bosa. You know, we slot them in 1 and 2. 1 and 3, sorry. Bosa, number 1 to Tennessee, and Buckner, number 3 to San Diego, which I think might be the best fit in the draft because San Diego's so weak on the D-line. I don't know that the NFL values them exactly the way that we do. I think Tunsil might end up going number 1, and then you've got all this QB stuff going on. Bosa might be available at 4, 5, or 6, and then we think he's a very good all-around player, and if he does drop there, one of those teams at 4, 5, 6, they're going to get a good player.
Yeah, I think Bosa's interesting because you look at his college production and his college tape, which you guys do. He's phenomenal. He's clearly the best college defensive lineman on the field. But then the NFL types try to project his upside, and they say, well, you know what? He doesn't dip that shoulder. He's not super fast off the edge. Is he even a right end? Or does he have to play left end where he's going to, you know, stop the run as well as get after the quarterback? Where do you think that's going to meet in the middle, the projected upside with the athleticism, with his clear ability to play the game at Ohio State?
I think if he's Jadeveon Clowney, if he has the same production but he looks like Jadeveon Clowney, he's a lock number one. And it's to your point, they want to see that explosion. And that's not the type of player he is. He's a guy that's so strong. I think he immediately steps in and becomes an elite run defender for whatever that's worth in, you know, the passing NFL. But a guy that can get after the QB, he just doesn't do it in that explosive, flashy way. He does it by winning with strength, winning with his hands. The guy we've compared him to recently is Cameron Jordan of the Saints, who, you know, maybe he's not a top overall pick type of guy, Cameron Jordan, but if you really dig down into his production, great against the run and an above-average pass rusher, pretty good guy. And the other guy we've looked at is Michael Bennett from the Seahawks from a production standpoint. I think Bosa can set the edge as an end, kick inside, beat some guards, even win off the edge at defensive end. I just think there's so much versatility to his game. Even though it doesn't always look as flashy, I think he's going to be a great player.
Before we let you go, I'm curious, like looking back to last year's draft, was there a guy that you were really, really high on? Maybe he went a little bit later than you anticipated, but then really had a great freshman rookie season this past year. Who was that guy for you guys?
We have our guy, Henry Anderson from the Colts, and we were pushing him as a first-round pick. I don't think anybody had him, and it was a similar thing. He was just this long defensive end from Stanford, wasn't flashy, wasn't explosive, incredibly productive. He actually outproduced Leonard Williams on a snap-for-snap basis last year in the Pac-12. We said, this guy's a first-round pick. He came out, went to the third round to the Colts, and he came out and was in the Defensive Rookie of the Year race early on before he got hurt. Excellent against the run and a disruptive player. I think Henry Anderson's the guy that we've looked at and said, you know what, our system really found him.
Two quickies before I say goodbye from me, Steve. One, Laquon Treadwell. If you put him in the mix with the wide receivers from last year, Amari Cooper, Kevin White, and Devontae Parker, where does he fit in that group? Rank him 1 through 4 for me.
He's at the bottom. I like Cooper. I like Cooper, Parker, White, and then Treadwell. I'm a huge Parker fan. I think he's going to develop for Miami. But with Treadwell, we're not as high as everyone else is. He doesn't separate very well, and he's supposed to be that Alshon Jeffrey contested catch type of guy. He just doesn't do it consistently enough. He'll flash it, but he's not a physical downfield presence like he's supposed to be. We actually have him more in the 20 range on our big board where I know everybody has him going top 10.
So who's your number one wide receiver? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Who's your number one wide receiver then?
Coleman from Baylor. You know, okay. So he's smaller. We've compared him to Steve Smith, feisty, speed. You know, he just runs away from defenders, can win the contested catch. He's great before the catch, after the catch. We like Corey Coleman. And then Leonte Carew from Rutgers is another guy that we're really high on.
Now, Coleman's not going to work this weekend, right? He's not going to do all the drills. Is that correct?
I haven't heard recently.
I'm not sure. There's one wide receiver that's not doing it. It might be him. Second question. We haven't touched on the corners yet. And with the Giants having just really one corner under contract and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who's your top corner on the board? And would he be in the mix, you think, around number 10?
Yeah, I think that our guys will be. And we're debating between a few guys right now. We're big on Vernon Hargraves and Mackenzie Alexander, who we're hearing is dropping quite a bit because of size issues and perhaps some off-field stuff. Hargraves and Alexander are similar because they're really athletic, but they're small.
Only 5'11", right?
Yeah, and I think those guys are valuable in the NFL, but the NFL's looking for the tall corner that can move, and that guy's William Jackson from Houston, who I think is going to blow it up here in the combine this year. He's 6'1". He's got movement skills. I think by the end of the week, he's going to be a locked first-round type of guy.
I lied. I've got one more.
Yeah, go ahead.
Von Bell, from what I understand, from Ohio State. Now, apparently, Giants could be in the same situation as they were last year, where this is a guy that has first-round talent but might not be drafted in the first round, could be there in the second. Is that somebody that you think the Giants could grab in the second and come in and play safety?
I could see it in the second. You know, I don't love the safety class. I'm still looking. The NFL hasn't developed a great free safety in years. I'm still looking for just a guy that could play that center field role. There aren't a whole lot of guys.
And Eric Berry and Earl Thomas class, that's really the last two guys, right?
It's really the last time we've seen the NFL draft and develop a really good free safety. So I look at Bell. He's inconsistent at Ohio State, but he's got the five-star type of pedigree. He's very athletic. I think NFL teams are going to want to work with him. We just don't see enough on tape to warrant a first-round pick. Maybe he sneaks into the second. We still have a little bit more work to do on him, but he wasn't, you know, great on a down-to-down basis at Ohio State.
Steve, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
I
enjoy the combine.
Notes.
Hey, I'm here all week. Whatever you need.
Bro Football Focus does a great job. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more Big Blue Kickoff Live right after this.
Where you from?
Excellent, Steve. Thank you. You're good to go.
Thanks.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. So nice meeting you.
Great info.
Great information.
I'll catch you guys later in the week.
Yeah, sounds good. Endurance. Thanks, guys.
And determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network.
We're back on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmoke and Anita Marks. We'll be joined, by the way, by Paul Schwartz from the New York Post in just a couple of minutes. But that was great information, Anita, from Steve. And we were going to have him at 12:10. We decided to put him on right off the top, and I can't think of a better way to start things off. A great picture of what every NFL team is going to be looking at when it comes to this draft class.
You know, I think we're going to be with you for the next 3 days, and we're going to have a potpourri of people that are going to be on. But and I'm so intrigued because obviously everybody watches game tape. Everybody has a different opinion about a certain player. On top of that, the next level is, you know, is that organization such as the Giants? We know they take best player available as opposed to need. But even so, how does that player gel with the system? For example, defensive player, how does he gel with Spags? There's so many layers to this onion in regard to really trying to dissect where we think the Giants are going to go. But it's just, I find it so intriguing, and I'm so excited. We've got some great guests that we've lined up for you, and I feel that when we're done here on Friday, I think you and I are just, we're going to be so in the know, right?
I hope so.
I think so. I mean, our guests are pretty spectacular, and I mean, we just learned so much from Steve to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the bottom line here, Anita, is that the Giants can have a lot of options at 10. They're going to have a lot of guys to choose from, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They'll have options at every layer of defense, whether it's the secondary, linebacker, defensive line, and they'll have a lot of options. And I think one thing Steve talked about, which is important, we had a chance to catch up with Giants VP of player Vice President of Player Evaluation, Mark Ross, earlier on today. And, you know, you'll see this up on Giants.com shortly. We did a fact or fiction with him, and one of the questions we asked Mark was, can what happens here at the Combine significantly affect your evaluation and opinion of a player? And he said, fiction. He goes, it's rare. It does happen sometimes. But what happens on tape during the season in these games is really trumps anything that happens in what people like to call the Underwear Olympics this weekend in Indianapolis.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, keep in mind, every organization has an entire department dedicated to, like, studying these guys, watching film, attending their football games, evaluating, analysis. I mean, the great thing about now, really, is, and this is a question I asked Steve, was the meetings, the one-on-ones. Yeah. Getting the opportunity to finally sit down with this young man and really talk and ask him questions and bring in your psychologist and your mental evaluators to kind of assess the situation, especially for a first-round draft pick. I mean, you're dedicating a first-round draft pick to a young man. You want to, like, I thought it was interesting. Steve said teams will only kind of gamble on one character flaw player. They can't take a gamble on two, because if two of them don't pan out, then it sets the organization way back. So, I think from what I understand in talking to a number of coaches and scouts, that's the biggest, I guess, advantage that they get for being here is the opportunity to really sit down and talk to these guys, because what they see on film far outweighs how the vertical and the cone and all that.
And the trick you have now is that these players are so coached up by their agents, the guys their agents hire to tell them what to say in the interview, so teams like what they have to say, that now teams have to sort through what's real in these interviews and also what's been coached. So are these kids really being honest? What's the real player that they're getting and the real person that they're getting as compared to what the players say, to what they did? What's their history? And that's something else that these organizations now have to sort through, because these players are so prepared for the combine in every single way.
Yeah, and also, I mean, don't think for a second, you've got Tennessee, you've got Cleveland with a one or two pick, and Cleveland with really a big decision, because a lot of people are expecting Cleveland to take a quarterback. They've done the research. They've gone back. For example, if Goff is the quarterback of choice for Cleveland, they've gone back. They've spoken to his pop, his peewee, his Pop Warner coach.
Absolutely.
His high school coach. I mean, they just, these teams, they do their due diligence, especially if there's a guy that they really highly covet. So, it's still a fun time. I mean, I landed this morning. There's a vibe. There's an excitement. There's an energy here, because you've got so many teams that, as we know, free agency is going to be here before we know it. The Giants, we're anticipating them to be big players because that's somewhere between 58 to 60 million. But also, this is a huge opportunity, especially if you've got a lot of picks, to really upgrade your team. So it's an exciting time for not just the players, but I think for the organizations as well.
Well, absolutely. And look, everyone knows that the Giants prefer to build their teams through the draft, and they've done it traditionally. That's how they want to build their teams. Free agency is a tool in the toolbox, obviously, but the way the Giants want to build their roster is to build it through the NFL draft. And the man that I think right now has been covering the Giants for the longest and have seen the Giants build through the draft many times is our good buddy Paul Schwartz from the New York Post. He joins us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul, how are you? I'm not trying to date you there, buddy. I'm sorry about that.
Are you the longest, the tenure? Are you the longest, more so than DeTino?
Am I the oldest? Oh, no. DeTino's got me. As far as writing for a newspaper.
Right.
Yes, I am the longest tenured journalist.
Really?
Writer,
so do
yes.
You walk into the media room? Are you like the big head honcho? Do you get first choice where you want to sit? When they break bread, do you break bread first and then everybody eats after? What comes along with that?
What comes along with being the longest tenured Giants beat writer?
Yeah.
Gray hair. That's about it. No,
looks,
I don't.
It looks good on you, though.
Thank you.
At least you have the hair to become gray, Paul.
Yes, I guess. I guess from a certain perspective, I'm happy. Yes, my father at 87 has a full head of gray hair, so as long as it's up there, I don't care what color it is.
All right, Paul, let's get into it. We're going to hear Ben McAdoo speak right after we're done here at around 2:00. So you're going to be our little preview here as we prepare. What kind of questions do you think Ben McAdoo is going to get today? Because obviously you guys had a lot of opportunities to talk to him at his introductory press conference. You talked to him off the podium as well, got a little more from him. So what do you think is going to be the big focus later on this afternoon when Ben McAdoo addresses the national media for the first time?
No wardrobe questions. Let's get that out of the way.
I think we're making bets on whether he comes up with a little wardrobe joke to break the ice in the beginning, which he might. Well, it is interesting. This is the first time we've seen Ben McAdoo as a head coach. He's been a head coach for several weeks, but it's been in the building. He's been a head coach in the building. This is his first time stepping out of the building. He wasn't at the Senior Bowl. A lot of staffs were. Hugh Jackson from the Browns just spoke. He was at the Senior Bowl, so that was a little bit of his coming out party as a head coach. Ben McAdoo and his staff was not at the Senior Bowl, so you're right. This is the first time. Now, I don't expect it to be presidential. I don't expect it to be a major, major moment. But I'm sure he's a little anxious for it. I'm sure he's looking forward to it. I think the issues will be basically roster related. Who do you expect to be on your team right now? I mean, I'm not going to get into specifics. What do you want to run on offense? What do you want to run on defense? I want to know from Ben who he expects to be on the team, and I don't expect I'll get a lot of answers. Certainly in free agency, he's not going to have a lot of answers. The draft, I'm sure he's not going to give us a list of names. I don't even know if they know the list of names yet, but, you know, Giants fans want to know, and media wants to know. The team has been 6-10 the last 2 years. Who are you bringing in to improve the situation? And, you know, Ben will at least maybe start the framework for that.
You know what I'd ask, if I could, and that is, how is this draft process going to be different in regard to, you know, you had Tom Coughlin, and he had a way of doing things, you know, as we know, kind of old school, nothing wrong with that. But Ben, younger, different, it's a new day, it's a new age, teams do things differently. I'm curious, if for example, is the staff, is the coaching staff going to have more say in the evaluation process, not just with, of course, the draft, but also free agency? How is that going to change? You know, certain things like, you know, I think that's going to be intriguing. That would be something that I want to know is what's changing here in regard to the staff and their involvement in the decision-making process.
Well, to piggyback off that, John Mara said at the podium after, you know, saying that Tom Coughlin was not going to be there anymore and McAdoo was taking over, that we're going to look at everything, right? He said, we're going to look at the process. Are we too severe in our evaluations? Are we not severe enough? So that led me to believe maybe they are going to make a lot of changes. I asked Jerry Reitz that point blank at the Senior Bowl, and he really made it pretty clear that there are not going to be a lot of changes right now anyway. I mean, you can't change things, you know, a midstream adjustment here. They're getting ready for this draft. You know, that was nice rhetoric by John Mara to say, you know, look, we have to study everything. But I don't think major things have changed. I think the scouts are going to be the primary focus of who are they going to draft. The coaches always had an evaluation and always had a say in this, but Jerry Reitz is a scout. He was a scout. He puts tremendous value in the scouts, so he's not going to cut off their heads. I'm sure of that. I asked Jerry point blank, are you making big changes? He said to me, scouting is scouting. So I think for this draft particularly, it's going to be 95% business as usual.
And, of course, if you read that article in the New York Post, Paul had a great exclusive with Jerry Reitz. And, you know, you had a chance to catch up with him and talk to him about some of the prior drafts, what he saw in some of the players the Giants took, good and bad. Can you talk a little bit about that conversation, how it went, and what you learned having that one-on-one time with Jerry Reitz at the Senior Bowl?
Well, you know, Jerry's a fairly defensive guy. You know, he likes to defend his position and his track record, which is – has two Super Bowl rings in that track record. But he doesn't give ground easily when it comes to, you know, this was not a good pick, this was not a good pick. You know, he mentioned to me unsolicited guys like Marvin Austin, who was a second-round bust, you know, who's a guy who barely is holding on to the lead in the league. And, you know, he was a guy they drafted in the second round. And he said, but he was a risk because he was a guy who was thrown off the team at North Carolina. You know, he mentioned, he thought it's completely unfair to mention, to label David Wilson as a bust, as a draft bust. He said the guy broke his neck. How can you label him as a bust? You know, somebody to take devil's advocate and say David Wilson was a guy who was getting less and less playing time when he was healthy because he couldn't hold on to the ball and couldn't gain positive yardage. So, but I agree, you can't label him a bust.
Of course not.
You know, after 2 years, he was out of the league. He might have been on his way to being a bust, but you can't label him a bust. But Jerry was, you know, he said, people can say to me, you take too many risks and maybe go play it safe. But he said, we've had, when we take a risk on a guy, everyone is on board with it. You know, I don't say, well, I don't care what you say. I'm taking a risk on this player. The coaches, the scouts are all saying, okay, this guy is worth the risk, which will be very interesting this year with a guy like Noah Spence from Eastern Kentucky, who is probably going to be the best pass rusher available when they pick at number 10.
Seems that way right now.
You know, now he's not a no-brainer. He's a Von Miller type, you know, everyone hopes. 3-4.
He was a stand-up rusher in college, right?
Yes, you know, and the Giants don't play that defense. So, you know, would you adjust it? Maybe they don't even like him football-wise from that point of view, but he's got a million issues. I mean, a million off-the-field issues, arrests, you know, admitted addiction to the club drug ecstasy, you know, banned by the Big Ten. So, and he's a guy, would they take a risk on him? You know, in the past, Jerry has not been averse to taking risks on guys certainly physically, maybe doesn't fit into the scheme, things like that. I don't think Jerry's going to be scared off by not necessarily this player, but I don't think Jerry's going to say, you know what, I'm under the gun here. The owner said I'm under the gun. I better pick a safe player. He's going to pick the guy who he thinks is going to be the great player, and maybe that comes with some risk.
Now, I know we've been talking a lot about the defensive side of the ball, and I think we're all going to anticipate that the Giants are going to make some moves, free agency as well as in the draft, and focus on defense. I mean, heck, it was what John Mara had communicated in the press conference. I'm going to throw a curveball out here, guys, because we know what we get with Eli Manning. What, looking at 3 to 5 more years, right? Nassib, he's got one more year. And let me tell you something. Nassib has a really good reputation out there in the NFL. I think Nassib is going to have an opportunity to go somewhere and compete for a starting job somewhere. Is this the draft that maybe the Giants go for a quarterback at some point in time, knowing, anticipating that, you know what, we just re-upped with Eli. Chances are Nassib is not going to be here as the backup. He might not be this future of this organization, and he just might get an opportunity somewhere.
I would be surprised at that. You know, I would think more so that they would go sign somebody. Go sign a guy who's a you know what, here's the devil's advocate, Anita. Let's say you go, let's say that happens. They say, you know, we don't want to pay $1 million for Nassib. We're going to draft someone in the fourth round. I mean, you're not going to draft one much higher than that. This is not considered a great draft for quarterbacks. There's only two looking like in the first round. Let's say they take a Hackenberg from Penn State in the third round or something like that. You cannot go on to into a season with Eli Manning and a rookie who's never played before as your quarterbacks. You can't do it. You have to still would have to sign somebody. Ben McAdoo probably doesn't want to keep three quarterbacks, I would guess. I just think there are so many positions other than quarterback. I think if you told me, Paul, with the 10th pick in the draft, the Giants are taking fill in the position other than quarterback, you can make a case for any position. Any. That's how bad this roster is. If you told me receiver, I would say that makes sense. If you told me a right tackle, I would say that makes sense. Anybody on defense, that makes sense. I mean, anybody. Do you disagree with that? I think
I don't think they take a quarterback in the first round.
Right.
No, I just think it's food for thought, and I think it's something that think that storyline is gonna be interesting to see how it plays out.
And of course, Paul, before the Giants make their draft pick, we're gonna know what they did in free agency, and I got to imagine you're anticipating this is probably going to be one of the busiest free agent periods you've seen in your tenure covering the team, considering all the available resources the team might have at their disposal. Let's start first with the guys on the roster last year that are now unrestricted free agents. You have three, frankly, of the better players on defense in Prince Mukamara, Robert Ayers, and Jason Pierre-Paul. Break it down. How do you see it going with those three guys?
How do I see it going? I think JPP will be back if they come up with a moderate deal. Okay, if someone out there loves the guy and says we're going to give you, you know, $13 million a year like he would have gotten without the hand, he's going to leave. The Giants are not paying that. If they come up with a deal in the $7 million range a year, something like that, I think they can work something out. They like him. They know him better than anybody. I think he showed enough last year in the last 8 games to warrant another contract, but it's got to be he's not a superstar anymore. It's got to be a very modest middle-range contract.
Before we move on, I'm curious, any update in regard to the surgery? Because I think that's going to be really key, is to find out how the surgery, how he responded to it, can he grip, can he play without a club? I think that's going to be really key based on the amount of money that he might get offered elsewhere and with the Giants.
I agree, but he's tweeted about it. I think he's shown his hand a little bit. You know, he tweeted a copy of his
X-ray.
X-rays.
I think he has it as his Twitter avi.
I think he wants to show that the middle finger is intact.
Right.
From a bone point of view. Here's what I think. I think the surgery might help, but it's not going to be a panacea. He's got a dysfunctional hand. There's no question about it. And whether it's 10% or 15% or 20% improved from what it was, it is probably going to be a fairly non-functional hand, and that's what you're going to have to live with. As far as Prince, I think if Prince gets $10 more from another team, he's going to sign with the other team. I think he's going to get more money somewhere else, and I think he will go. That's my suspicion because, moderately young, moderately healthy. I mean, the guy's never been healthy for a full season.
What's your sense of the market for him because of all those things?
I think that the market for cornerbacks is good.
There's not many guys out there, right?
I just think he's someone will look at him and maybe a good team will say, you know what, we need a cornerback to plug in and we're ready to roll. You know, you can do a lot worse than Prince. He's never going to be a superstar. I don't think he'll ever be in a Pro Bowl, but he's a good, solid player who hasn't been healthy enough, and that's always set him back. So I could foresee Prince leaving. I don't think the Giants are going to break the bank on him. And quite frankly, I think they have to either re-sign Robert Ayers or sign someone else. They need...
He was really productive last year, Paul.
Yeah, and I think Robert Ayers is a classic 2-3 defensive end. He's not your... You know, if he's leading your team in sacks, you got a problem, which is what happened last year. He led the team in sacks, and they had a problem. He needs someone to occupy someone on the other side, and then he can be a good player.
I was just going to say, look at his sack numbers once JPP came
he's
back.
He's a 2-3 guy. He's a starter, or at best, perfect scenario, he's your third guy rotating in. You know, he's your young Justin Tuck. You know, rotating in. You have two starters, and he's your third guy. You bring him in. He plays 45 snaps, and, you know, and away we go. That's it, I think, with those guys.
So again, I know we've been talking a lot about the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, you said, okay, you could imagine, you can see a wide receiver. We just had Steve on from Pro Football Focus, and he said really no bells and whistles in regard to the wide receiving core and what's coming in. What about running back? What about tight end? You know what?
Yes.
You want it all.
No, I mean they need it all.
I know
they need it all. You know, look. I'm not ready to run Reuben Randle out of the building, and I know there's a lot of fans are really down on Reuben Randle. I understand that, but right now he's your second best receiver on the roster. Okay, I'm taking Victor Cruz and putting him off on the side. You know what I mean? It's like when you have a meal, you're trying to lose weight. You say, okay, I'm going to put this off on the side, and maybe I won't touch this, but maybe I will. You know, I wasn't looking at you when I was looking at everybody when I was saying that. but you know what I mean? Let's say you say, okay, the fans have had enough of Reuben Randle. We're not going to re-sign Reuben Randle. Okay, now you have the great Odell Beckham, right? You have Victor Cruz coming back who you can count on for nothing. Okay, you think he's coming back, and everyone hopes that he comes back. At what level physically, no one knows. Look, he's got his lower body's been through a heck of a lot the last 2 years. Hopefully they work something out financially and he comes back. But seriously, from an on-field football point of view, you can count on him in for nothing. Okay, maybe he'll be great again, maybe not, but you can't count on that. So if you don't re-sign Reuben Randle, you need a dynamic playmaker there. Now, signing one is not going to be – Alshon Jeffrey is going to be franchised or get a long-term deal. So you're not going to get one in free agency, I don't think. You're going to pay through the nose for one of those guys. You're going to have to draft one pretty high. I'm not saying the first round, but – second, third round, you're going to have to draft a receiver, and then it's a rookie receiver. And like, who the heck knows what's going
to
happen with
the
that?
The guys that are out there in regard to free agency, that names would people know, Mohamed Sanu, Marvin Jones, Travis Benjamin.
The curse kid from Seattle also.
Right.
Yes. So, I mean, you know, really, let's face it, like low-end 2-3 wide receivers.
Yeah, and receivers,
that are out there.
And there's a premium on them. The market is going to be inflated. A lot of teams have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so that... market, so you say maybe you can get Reuben Randle the little less, you know, maybe the market is not as hot for Reuben Randle, you bring him back. I'm just saying, I'm not in love with the guy, I'm just saying you don't, I don't think it with this roster, you can just say, forget about this guy. If the guy has a little bit of talent, you got to consider him.
You know, Paul, and I think one underrated part of free agency this year is interesting, and you mentioned it right there, there are a lot of teams with a lot of money. And we've seen the last couple years, oh, the Jaguars have all this cap space. Oh, the Raiders have all this cap space. Well, they couldn't find good enough players to spend their money on. How important is it for the Giants early on in this free agency period, or maybe it's not, to target 2-3 top guys that they know are fits and they know they want and make sure they get them so they don't run into a situation where they have all these resources left but nobody matches the profile of the guy they want to bring in left on the market?
You know what? They're going to have to overpay a little bit. That's just the way it is. If you don't want to overpay, you're going to have to wait till the second tier. And the Giants can't wait till the second tier. You know, a guy like Malik Jackson from the Broncos, okay? There's reports that they're offering him $10 million a year. And and I don't know if that's going to be enough to get it done. And on the open market, he may get $13 million a year. Now, is he a $13 million a year player? I mean, I don't think so. But if you want to get him, you're going to have to overpay. You're going to have to pay him like a superstar, and he's just maybe a budding star.
And even with a superstar like last year, Ndamukong Suh, go ask the Dolphins now if they want to have a $27 million cap in on that guy's contract this year.
I think they're renegotiating that, right?
Yeah, but what looks great, you know, it looks great the first few days in free agency with the great headlines, this guy. Look, the Giants put in an $80 million bid for Albert Haynesworth several years ago. And he got more money somewhere else. You imagine that contract? I mean, he was a disaster from Jump Street, right? So, you know, I mean, you have to be careful. But look, they have a lot of money, and they may have to amp it up a little bit and just say, you know what, he's not quite worth that, but we got to do it. You know, look, they have to. I wrote the other day, they need 6 impact players between free agency and the draft. That's a lot, and it's probably too many to expect, but that's a lot.
Well, I mean, some of the big name, like you said, Alshon Jeffrey, you know, reports are he's talking to Chicago right now to work out a deal. Von Miller, we anticipate him to be tagged. I mean, some of the guys out there, and John and I and Lance and Paul and Feegs, we host this show
right.
5 days a week, and we have Giant fans who call in, and they're always asking, well, what about this player? What about this player? What about this? And we laugh and we giggle and we roll our eyes because we know they're either going to be tagged or the team's going to work out a deal. So those are your upper echelon, the guys that are really like Giants fans really right. salivating over. So what? Give us some guys that you feel like, you know, is it you know, I want to say like Cameron Wake, for example. That might be a guy that might be kind of out because they don't have enough money to work his deal. Jackson might be one like you just said.
Olivier Vernon, perhaps.
See, I think they go Vernon over Wake. That's why I think Cameron Wake.
Right. Who are those stars that maybe a team can't afford because of their cap situation?
Just from the Broncos, Danny Trevathan, the linebacker. I mean, he's a good player. You know, he'd be an immediate starter on the Giants. And you know, as we've seen with all these Super Bowl teams, they can't keep everybody. You know, if they're going to pay Malik Jackson $10, $11 million a year, they're not going to keep the linebacker. So, you know, he's a guy I think could definitely fit, and he's not a household name. You know, he's a good player. You know, he's not Von Miller, but like you said, Von Miller is not going to be free. Trevathan would be an instant upgrade. You know, look, the whole linebacker deal with the Giants has just been such a black hole. You know, they haven't drafted one in the first round since Carl Banks. You know, everybody they get in free agency, you know, Antonio Pierce was a hit. You know, Kavika Mitchell for a year was a hit. But so many of them have been misses, and so many of their draft picks, you know, in the second, third, fourth, fifth round have been misses. You know, it's not the most premier position in football anymore, but you can't just patchwork. For years and years, they've just been patchworking the position. You know, they got 10 good games out of John Beeson, and that was it. You know, Devon Kennard, everyone thinks he's going to be a really good player, but the guy is fragile. He does not stay on the field. So, you know, they need someone to come in and play, and, you know, I think that's a key position for them. I could see them going for it in the first round. I really could.
Last one for me, Paul. One position we haven't really talked about. You mentioned it briefly, the offensive line. The Giants decide to let go of both Will Beatty and Jeff Schwartz. So you know, center to left tackle, you have a good feel of who your guys are going to be, assuming you're leaving Eric Flowers out there and Pugh stays at that left guard spot. Do you think one of the two starters on the right side of that offensive line are on the roster right now? Or do you think both will be acquired at some point in the draft or free agency over the next few months?
I do not think the starting right tackle is on the roster right now. I'd be very confident about that, unless they're pulling a rabbit out of a hat somewhere that I haven't seen, unless they're moving Flowers to right tackle.
Right.
But one of the starting tackles is not on this team. I firmly believe that.
And how about the other guard spot?
That very easily could be a new guy also. You know, I could see the guard being someone they sign, you know, a veteran, and I could see the tackle being someone they draft. Because I don't think you can sign, you know, they got rid of Jeff Schwartz. If they want to sign Mitchell Schwartz away from the Browns, I mean, he's the top right tackle on the market. He's going to command a tremendous amount of money. I mean, stupid money. He's going to really command a lot of money, you know, and he's a good player. He'd be the best right tackle on the Giants, but do you want, so I could see them drafting a guy in the second round at right tackle and hoping that he starts. And I could see them signing a guard. So, yeah, I mean, you know, 3/5 is good, but it's not good enough.
It's interesting. Jeff Schwartz would always tell me that his brother was a better offensive lineman than he was. So
he's right.
I know. We'll see what happens.
He is absolutely right.
But now, was it devastating that you lost a fellow Schwartz off the team?
You know, I talked to Jeff during the Super Bowl in San Francisco, and you know, Tom Rock from Newsday and I were talking to Jeff, and Tom brought up, you know, asked the question, you know, what do you think about being back? And I think Jeff was really taken aback by that. I don't think he thought he was going to be going anywhere. So I think he was shocked that he was let go, you know, feeling he was healthy. Yes, look, any roster without a Schwartz is diminished in my mind. Yeah.
I thought he was going to have to maybe restructure his deal. He did not think that he would be.
Correct.
I think it was pretty shocking for him.
Is that he was not on board when he thought he was still going to be back with the Giants. He was not 100% on board with, hey, the Giants will sign your brother and you can play together. He was not very on board with that. He said,
really?
Unbelievably. Yeah, I wrote a story about it. He said, you know, we're great friends and we love each other, but I could probably deal with him for like 2 weeks. And then, you know, he sees the world one way, I see it another way. It was really, really interesting. You know, I said, you're going to recruit your brother, right?
Oh, okay. That's funny.
Now they can use Jeff's money to pay Mitchell.
I have one more question before I let you go, because, I find it interesting. I talked to a number of analysts and scouts who actually feel that Flowers would be best suited on the right side and play right tackle. You're shaking your head. You've heard the same thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, I think he's built like a right tackle. He's built like, you know, he's a big, monstrous man. I think the Giants drafted him to be their right tackle, to have Will Beatty start at left tackle, and then they kind of go year to year.
But where the heck do you find a left tackle then?
Well, that's a problem.
That's the trick,
right,
isn't
that's
it?
A problem. He would have been, as a rookie, he would have been a better player at right tackle. I don't think he cannot play left tackle, but I think he... But look, yeah, you're going to start looking for left tackles. Now you're going to be paying through the nose, and you know you're going to have to use your first round pick on one. And if there's probably no one there. I guess the kid from Michigan State, Conklin,
yeah. Ronnie Stanley, Notre Dame is another guy that people talk about.
Yeah, these are good players. But you know, we've seen higher rated prospects than those guys come into the league and either play right tackle or play guard. You know, so I'm not sure you can say that guy can play. And left tackle is a whole different animal. If you start looking for those guys, it's a hard thing to find.
And Giant fans will lynch me if I don't ask you this question, because this is all the questions I get. Will they sign a veteran safety?
A veteran safety? I would imagine they will. Yeah, I would imagine they will. I think Antrell Roll's going to be on the street. I think the Bears are going to cut him. But I don't think the Giants will re-sign him. I do not.
Well.
They have a million, you know, Nat Burhey will be back.
They have a lot of young guys.
Bennett Jackson will be back. All guys who've never played and can't stay healthy.
But I feel, don't you feel that Landon Collins, because I know, you know, you cover the team, you're there all the time, you've gotten to know him. I just feel one thing that was really missing for him last year was that veteran leader.
Absolutely,
That really took him under their wing and kind of guided them, taught him. Yes. This is how you be a pro's pro. This is how you... And I think they
tried to find somebody in Brandon Merriweather, but I don't think it worked out the way they wanted.
No, I don't think so.
It was not, or Craig Dahl. No.
I'm with you. I don't think they bring Roll back, but I think Roll would be so fantastic as that guy for Landon Collins.
Only if he was a coach.
Yeah.
Which he's not going to be. I just don't.
I could see him being a phenomenal coach, by the way. Him and John Beeson. I can see both of them being phenomenal coaches.
I could see both of them also wanting to have a much easier life.
Yeah.
and wanting to put the headsets on that we're wearing and talk for a living.
Florida's really nice this time of year, by the way.
And not have to be at a personnel meeting at 6:20 in the morning. I always laugh when people say John Beeson is going to be a great coach, and I think
I always laugh when they say any player is going to be a great assistant coach. Yes. Being an assistant coach is a pretty crappy job sometimes. I got to be honest with you. It's real tough.
I saw Chase Blackburn at the Senior Bowl, and he's dying to become a head.
Oh, really?
To become
Good
a
for
coach.
Him.
And I think the Panthers I think interviewed him
Good
for
Chase.
Assistant special teams, which is perfect. He wants to be linebacker or assistant special teams. He seems like a guy who could be a tremendous coach.
I'm with you on that.
John Beeson, a starter, Antrell Roll, guys who made some money. It's too hard of a job.
Paul, we appreciate the time, my friend. Great stuff as always. Enjoy the next 4 or 5 days, and we'll know, based on what you ask Jerry Reese tomorrow, who the Giants' next draft pick will be. So I expect you to get that answer for us, okay?
I'll get it out of him. You'll see.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Paul Schwartz, New York Post, thank you for joining us. We'll be back with more Big Blue Kickoff Live from the Combine in Indianapolis right after this on Giants.com.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine, and the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine, Friday through Monday, only on NFL Network.
John Schmelk, Anita Marks back with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. We'll try to squeeze in some calls with you as we move forward. Next up will be Roman Oben, of course, former New York Giant.
I miss Roman.
The great members of our broadcast team.
I know.
We should have Roman in a couple minutes when he gets over here.
I'm excited for him, though. I had a chance to catch up with him when I was out in San Francisco. And he loves his new position. You know, he's a big executive now, you know,
He's a big shot
in the NFL. We'll clue you in exactly what he's doing. Dabbling still with Giants broadcast. So, excited to talk to him.
Yeah, and it's good to get a player's perspective, I think, from what mm-hmm. happens at the combine, you know, what it's like. And, you know, it's funny, when we were walking here this morning, the way we walk up here, you know, you kind of walk past and you see we walked through the skyways.
Did you really?
Not outside. No.
I Ubered.
Spoiled.
Sorry.
So, we're walking through and, you know, you can see sometimes where they're doing the weigh-ins and they take the pictures, and it's the most awkward thing. You got all the guys like in the bleachers in the stands, and they're all staring at this poor kid
right.
in his underwear, and there were no shirt on, getting pictured for the physical. And it's a weird scene here. And I wonder from a player what that's like.
That's another thing. I'm not down with like their attire either.
You mean the players?
Like the tighties they have to wear. I don't know.
That's the new thing though. You want to be aerodynamic, because if you're baggy. You know, you got the baggy shorts and the baggy shirt and all that stuff. You run the 40, you get held back by the wind.
I was, you know, obviously, of course, I follow Giants on Twitter, and the Giants Twitter feed is putting out, of course, like, you know, a lot of the guys who were drafted from last year and the year before and whatnot. And I saw Odell Beckham Jr. was listed as one of the fastest guys to ever compete in the combine. What was his 40 time? I don't mean to put you on the hot seat. I don't know. I don't remember. But it was up there, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
it was.
Like Odell was definitely. I mean, he rocked this combine.
Correct.
If
you watch Finding Giant at Giants, the reaction of the Giants front office watching him do the stuff here at the combine, especially running the 40, was like, whew.
Right.
I guess what we saw on college tape was just confirmed.
Yeah. So I heard that's what I did hear that about him. I mean, he totally crushed it. Interesting to see who crushes it this year. Also, this is pretty cool. So. Adidas is giving away $1 million. Did you hear this?
I did not.
Adidas is giving away $1 million to the one player who can break the 40 record set by Chris Johnson. But here's the key. They have to be wearing Adidas cleats.
Oh, boy.
So they have to be running the 40 in Adidas cleats. And if they break the 40 time, they get $1 million from Adidas. That's pretty cool.
Well, if something tells me they're not going to be.
But if I'm one of those guys
writing that check.
If I'm one of those guys that I feel like, you know, I've got the speed to compete, I might slip on some Adidas and try to win that $1 million.
Absolutely.
Why not? What are you going to lose?
All right, folks. As you wait on Roman Oben, we will open up the phones here at 201-939-4513. Give us a call, calling. Get on the line. We can take a couple calls as we wait for Roman to join us right here from Indianapolis at the Combine on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk, Anita Marks with you. And obviously, we don't see anybody actually hit the field and do any of their workouts until Friday, and that's going to be the running backs, the offensive line, and some of the special teams guys. So we're going to have to wait a little bit.
Which was surprising to me. If I remembered correctly, I thought it was happening now, but no, it's not.
Yeah, the only thing we get on Thursday is bench press from the offensive linemen and running backs.
Bench press.
So we don't get anything on the field. The bench happens, obviously, kind of, you know, off to the side. So we'll get that on Thursday, but, you know, we don't on Friday. We'll get the those three groups on the field. We'll get bench press from like the wide receivers, DBs, and tight ends on Friday as well. But then the big workout days are Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. That's when, you know, you're really going to get your speed guys, your skill position guys out there kind of doing their thing.
So this is pretty cool. The Seattle Seahawks are actually having a combine for the media to compete.
That's got to be some ugly numbers.
But how much fun would that be?
How
much fun would that be if the Giants had, like, the media be able to compete in, like, the 40? Beckton is shaking his head. It's like, heck no.
Do you think they could do a speed walking drill for Dottino?
Who'd win? Thank you. Thank you.
Well, which drill? You got to tell me what drill you're going to win.
Well, it's combined. It's the 50. It's the vertical. It's the cone. It's combined. I think the Giants need to do that too. I think it'd be fun.
Well, you got
to
give people some time to train for it too. You just want to go out there and challenge everybody, don't you?
I'd love to do it. I'd love to do it. We should try to implement that.
I would love
year.
To see you race
be
Paul
fun.
Dottino. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Be fun, and we broadcast it live.
Because I think Paul thinks he's really fast, you know? Paul definitely thinks he's fast.
Are you ripping Paul Dottino without him being here?
I'm just saying, Paul likes to brag about his power walking through the neighborhood, right?
He does.
He loves to brag about
that. Have you been on the phone with him while he's power walking?
No, thank goodness.
It's a treat.
Does he start like telling you like what he's seeing in the neighborhood as you're walking around?
You're hearing like dogs bark, you're hearing like horns, you're hearing I almost got hit. Yeah, because you're talking on the phone, he's probably not paying attention, he's all excited because he's talking Giants. So yeah, it's a treat.
I would like to see the Lance Meadow vertical leap.
I do
want to see that.
That will be fun.
See how high he can get.
That would be fun. Who do you think would win?
Well, you mean like a compilation of all the events?
Yeah.
I'm a confidence guy. I have to say, I think I'm going to win.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I might be wrong, but that's what I'm going to say.
Listen, you know, we've played hoops together. You've got hoop skills. So yeah. I'm not going to doubt it. I'm not going to doubt it.
You can play a little bit, too.
A little bit. I was on that one day.
Oh, yeah, you're hitting all those J's.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. that was back in the day when we used to have training camp up in Albany, by the way.
Just that one day. Yeah. Do you miss Albany?
I think I do sometimes. You know,
kind
that
of
was
like,
a,
like it was kind of like getting away.
Well, and if you talk to the crew too, even from the broadcasting side, I'm sure it's the same from the player perspective too. You really bond with everybody around you because you're up in Albany. You know, your
right.
family's not around. Your other friends aren't around. You know, you go out at night. You go have dinner. Who are you having dinner with? You're having dinner with the people
crew,
you work with.
Right?
You're going out to get a drink with the people you work with, and you know that's kind of what you did. And that's really what you miss from Albany. Playing basketball after you're done with the day's work, things like that. And those are the things you do miss. That's a little bit different having training camp back at the facility.
I wonder if it holds true as well with the players.
I think probably does.
But
right?
Granted, yes, the players they're still at the hotel together. They're obviously together more so than. You know, we get done with our work day and then, you know, we all go home. They don't. They're still together. But I wonder if, you know, not going away to a destination, if it kind of takes away from the camaraderie. I would imagine it does a little bit.
201-939-4513. Again, if you want to give us a call, get in here. We will take some calls until Roman Oben joins us in about, hopefully, a couple minutes here at the Combine. Roman's running a little bit late. We haven't seen that one before. 201-939-4513. And I will tease him about them when he gets on the air. So I'm not doing it behind his back. I'm just preparing the fans for me giving him a whole lot of you know what when he actually finally gets over here. Roman killing me. You know, a couple of things about this draft, Anita, that's funny. And sometimes you go into these drafts, especially when you're picking high, and you're like, hey, you know what? What this team really needs and is looking for, where they're picking, you know, I'm not sure there's going to be a guy there that really fits the profile, but I think with the way this is set up this year, the Giants are going to have a lot of different options and guys to pick from. And, you know, Steve mentioned it and Paul mentioned it. You know, you can even talk about a wide receiver. You can talk about an offensive tackle. You can talk about any number of positions on defense from corner to linebacker to end to defensive tackle. There are just options, you know, everywhere. For this team when they're going to 10. And I think it's going to be a real challenge for this Giants front office, scouts, and coaching staff to come together and really pick. Because they're going to have a lot of different players at different spots that could be able to help them this year.
Well, one thing that I definitely walked away with our interview with Steve, and if you missed it, obviously the show's going to be
archived
yep. on Giants.com. So I highly recommend you go back and check it out. Steve was our first guest. We had him on at the top of the hour. Was what a perfect storm, right, for the Giants right now, because we know how much they need at the defensive side, on the defensive side of the ball, and the amount of talent that's going to be available in this draft. If ever there was a time or an opportunity to trade down, because you do feel that your 10 through 5 or your 10 through 6 or 7 are of equal value, this is the draft to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the draft to do it.
So I wouldn't, you know, after talking to Steve, I wouldn't be shocked if this is the draft that the Giants actually trade down in.
Well, we'll see, though, because, you know, it might come to the position.
How many draft picks do they have? Do they have this year? Again, I'm asking you questions. I'm putting you on the hot seat.
You know what? That's actually a great question. I believe they have not given out the compensatory picks yet this year. So
okay.
I'm not sure exactly how many they're going to wind up with. But
that will be decided after free agency.
That is correct.
Right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and they base it off of who they got and lost in last year's free agent class. There's a formula that no one can really articulate how they figure it out, but they do it based on how well those players played, how big their contracts were, and then you compare that to the guys that you brought in versus who you lost, and that's to decide who gets, you know, the majority of those compensatory selections.
Interesting.
So we'll figure that out as we move forward. And here at the Combine in Indianapolis, John Schmelk, Anita Marks with you again, 201-939-4513. Take a look at Twitter real quick. And a lot of Giant fans, and we've gotten these before, Anita, a lot of people very excited about that linebacker position. And, you know, he talked about some of the linebackers that are going to be available. And I think
Miles Jack is one,
and Jalen Smith's the other. And I think the interesting thing is that neither one of those guys is here today really doing all the drills. Miles Jack will be able to look at his knee, and Jalen Smith will look at his knee. But, you know, Smith had the torn ACL. Miles Jack had the meniscus. Neither guy is going to be able to perform today in all the drills and do all that work. So I think it'll be very interesting to see where those guys end up falling when they take all those medical things into consideration.
You know, another thing that I think that you have to be aware of when it comes to the Giants, and we know in regard to the injuries that this team has dealt with, mm-hmm. might be a little gun-shy. Wouldn't you think that maybe a little gun-shy going after a player that has some health issues in regard to especially a linebacker with a knee?
Well, I think you have to do your due diligence and try to figure out how well it's healing, if the guy's going to be 100%. You know, and it's hard to figure, and I think Jerry Reese said this after the season when he, you know, spoke to the media, that, you know, some guys you draft, they have a really dirty injury history, which means they have a lot of injuries, they've missed some games, and those guys end up, you know, being healthy and playing all their games. And you have some guys that never miss a college game, Anita, and then they come in there and they miss a bunch of games in the pros. So I think it's a real tricky thing, figuring injuries out. But you're right. You have to do your due diligence on those two guys. I mean, those are two fairly serious knee injuries. They're not the things you bounce back from. You know, 9 to 12 months for an ACL tear. You know how that works. And, you know, Miles Jack has been out since September with the meniscus. He only played in 3 games this year. So you're going to have to figure it out. But both those guys could be difference makers.
Yeah, Smith, by the way, ACL and MCL.
Oh, he did the MCL as well.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what the final verdict on that one
was. Yeah, so, you know, I think it's got to be something that, you know, you've got to have some concerns about. And I know Giant fans are pretty excited with the change in the coaching staff and the change with the training as well. Getting a new new trainer in there. I think a lot of Giants
strength and conditioning coach.
I think a lot of Giants fans are excited about that, thinking and hoping, of course, that, you know, because of that change, new philosophy, new way of working out, possibly, that this will be an organization that will see fewer injuries, especially fewer injuries to big star players, playmakers.
Yeah, obviously, and that's one, you know, big thing the Giants want to try to improve moving forward is just staying healthy. And that last year, you know, if, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul's there the whole year, who knows how that changes the season. You saw the impact he had when he came back. And, you know, then Robert Ayers missed a couple games. Prince Mukamara missed games in the middle of the year. Then offensively, they lost Jeff Schwartz, obviously, Will Beatty in the offseason, Victor Cruz, how can I forget him? So, obviously, you have a number of guys there that, if they're available, your season could be a whole lot better.
You know, in regard to as we get closer and closer to free agency, mm-hmm. Realistically, I mean, what players do you have kind of on your radar that you feel that will be available that you'd like to see the Giants go after?
Well, you know, I think I'll be able to give you a better answer once we know who gets franchised. Because like you mentioned when you're talking to Paul, I think a lot of those premium players, there's a reason they don't hit free agency often, because they are so good and teams want to hold on to them. So you know, guys like that, whether you're talking about, you know, Von Miller, I would think Muhammad Wilkerson's going to get franchised. I would think, you know,
here,
Eric.
I just have a list here.
Yeah,
of like
I would
guys.
Think Eric Berry's going to get franchised. I would think Josh Norman's going to get franchised. So I think all those guys are certainly players that when you look at who's available in free agency might not be available. Kirk Cousins is another guy. Cordy Glenn with the Bills. Josh Norman the corner. So who's going to be
Wilkerson
there?
With the Jets.
You know, I think, like you mentioned, Olivier Vernon's kind of on the cusp. Is he going to be franchised or not? I'm not quite sure. We'll have to wait and find out. But the Giants will certainly have a lot of options moving forward when they try to figure that out. You're watching Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Anita Marks. Now we welcome in our next guest. You know him well from this show. He's joined us many times on the phone now. We're very pleased to have him live at the Combine in Indianapolis. That is Dane Brugler, the great draft analyst for CBS Sports. Also does great work for the Dallas Cowboys and their web shows as well. I'm sure you're busy this week, Dane. Thanks for taking time to join us. How's it intrigued you so far? Go ahead, Dane. I'm sorry. That's my fault.
So far, so good. Yeah, it's a little rainy out there, but here at Lucas Oil Stadium, you know, we're starting to get some of the medical information, some of the measurements are coming down. So starting to pick up. We'll see, you know, throughout the rest of the week, stuff will start to pick up more and more. But right now is kind of the calm before the storm.
What do you learn most being here? You know, you hear so many different things from coaches, whether
right.
they feel that this really is the combine, really is an advantage for them or not. What's the biggest thing you learn with your analysis heading into the draft by being here?
Well, first and foremost, the most important thing is the medical information. And that's really why the Combine was created in the first place, is so we could have a central location for all the teams to get, you know, all the, you know, MRIs. And that's really why the Combine's here in Indianapolis. They're set up for that type of medical equipment and that type of thing, because you figure there's 323 players here. They have to go through all these medical tests. It's extensive. And so instead of going city to city, get it all done here. And so I think learning about Miles Jack, that knee, Jalen Smith, his knee, go countless and go down the list. Each player has some kind of injury history that we have to find out, which is a big part of the draft process. Then the second part is the interview process. A lot of these seniors we've seen at the All-Star Game, the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Game. The Senior Bowl, or the Combine, is really the first time we get to talk to these underclassmen and some of these other seniors that we didn't get to see at the Senior Bowl, like a Connor Cook from Michigan State. So the medical information, the interviews, those two areas are the most important. And then third would be the agility drills. And, you know, we can talk about the underwear Olympics and how important is the 40-yard dash. And, you know, it can be overblown sometimes. And some people think that it's overrated. And I think it's somewhere in the middle. You have to know how to use the information, you know, use all the – and for different positions, it's different for each drill. Have to know how to be able to use the numbers that we get and the test results.
You mentioned the Senior Bowl. And one thing that I find interesting is after the Senior Bowl, based on how impressive certain guys were, maybe there was a guy that was low on the radar, but he really overperformed. Coaches really loved – you know, what he was able to do at practice. He really stood out at practice. What a great opportunity for these guys to compete in the Senior Bowl and then come here and then have a lot more hype around their performance here. Who are some of those guys that really impressed in the Senior Bowl that maybe coming here you weren't so impressed by, but after the Senior Bowl, now this is a guy you don't want to miss his workout?
Well, I think first and foremost is Carson Wentz. You know, and it's not that we weren't impressed with him going into the Senior Bowl, but there was a lot of unknown. Coming from the FCS level, obviously it's a big jump. But at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, Carson looked, you know, he looked unfazed by the jumping competition, taking pro coaching. He adapted very well. And so Carson Wentz has a lot of momentum to be that top quarterback drafted this year, which is unheard of for a kid from North Dakota State. Have to go back to 1995, Steve McNair out of Alcorn State, the last time a non-Division I quarterback was the first quarterback drafted. So I think for Carson, he has to come here to the Combine, continue that momentum. He's planning on throwing out here, which all the top quarterbacks are, which is great. Get a chance to see him rip it and see him next to a Jared Goff, next to a Paxton Lynch. How does he stack up to the other top quarterbacks in this class? So I think Carson Wentz is the obvious one. He has a chance to be the first quarterback drafted. Maybe Cleveland at 2, Dallas at 4, both possibilities.
We had Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus on earlier. He does a great job watching all that college tape. And he said to him, there's a pretty clear top tier of players in this draft, the guys that could be considered superstars. How deep does that tier go when you look at this group and who's in there?
I think it's 7 or 8, and I think really there's a clear-cut top five for me. Start with Laramie Tunsil. I think he's the best player in this draft. He's as clean as you get for an offensive tackle. You know, some guys are just born to play the position, and that's Laramie Tunsil with his body control, his athleticism, his arm length, the overall size that he brings to the field. So he's a plug-and-play left tackle. That's why Tennessee at number one makes a lot of sense for them. Even when they have Taylor Lewan, maybe move him to right tackle, they have to protect Marcus Mariota. After Tunsil, then I think you have some defensive players Joey Bosa from Ohio State, Jalen Ramsey, Florida State, Miles Jarrett from UCLA is up there. And I think with all those players, I think they're on a similar tier in terms of defensive impact that they can make at different levels. And you have Bosa, he's not that traditional or that, that Von Miller that everyone wants right now. He can just scream off the edge, but he has power. He wins with leverage. He understands how to use his strengths to beat the blocker. He knows how to disrupt the blocker's rhythm. And so Joey Bosa might not be that double-digit sack guy, but he doesn't need to be. I mean, Von Miller is one of the he's about to be paid like one of the top non-quarterbacks in the league. He had 11 sacks last year. I think that sack number is a little bit overrated. It's more about disruption. And can you impact what the offense wants to do and make them block you with an extra blocker, chip, or whatever? So I think Joey Bosa's up there. And then the fifth guy, would be Ezekiel Elliott.
Wow.
A running back who – is he on the same level as Todd Gurley a year ago? Probably not, but he's close. It's hard to find weaknesses in his game. He can do it all, and he can do it all at a high level.
All right. We talked to Steve. He actually had Goff, one of the quarterbacks, in that top level. If you take Need out of the equation, mm-hmm. and you're just looking at player grades, how good are these guys at what they do?
Right.
And you don't rate the quarterback position any higher than you do the linebacker
right.
in terms of importance. Where do Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, if you like him too, go in this draft? Are they first-round picks or are they second-round picks?
I think they're first-round picks, and they're somewhere fighting to get into that top 10. I don't think they're locked top 10
they're
guys.
They're in the teens, that
right,
area?
Exactly.
Okay.
Mid-first-round range. When you look at it with Jared Goff, he's not the most physically impressive player. He's a little leaner than you want. His arm strength is good, not great. He really needs to use his entire body to put velocity on his throws. But he's so advanced mentally. He sees the field well. He anticipates. He throws receivers open. And I think there are some concerns there coming from the air raid offense. You look at him on film, all of the play calls he's getting from the sideline. I mean, he's not reading the defense at the line of scrimmage, calling audibles, and checking at the line. So there will be a learning curve for him, just like all these quarterbacks. And ideally, you'd like for him to sit. But for Jared Goff, he's probably the most NFL-ready quarterback. And that's why, he's going to be in that conversation to be the top quarterback, along with Wentz, who, when you look at it coming from the FCS level, it's tough. It's such a jump in competition, but at least with Carson, you can look on the film and say, okay, he's taking snaps from under center.
Right.
He is looking, they put so much on his plate, he's making audibles at the line of scrimmage based on his pre-snap reads. And so there's a lot to like there with Carson Wentz. And then Paxton Lynch, he's probably later in the first round for me. I think we'll see him go earlier than that, but he's so young in quarterback years. He has still a ways to go, but there are a lot of scouts in this league who think 3 to 5 years from now, when we look back, Paxton Lynch will be the best quarterback of them all.
Interesting. So one conversation we were having before you sat down was the fact that, A, the Giants are in such need of so much defensive help, okay, whether it's going to be free agency or the draft. Number two, because there's such a deep amount of talent coming out this year on defense, at the 10 spot, do you feel, is that a spot that you can't risk trading down in? Or do you feel that there's so much talent that maybe 10 through 13 or 10 through 5 kind of have equal value for you depending on the defensive player?
And it will be interesting because I think there are, 7 or 8 top-tier players in this draft. But, if one of those would fall to 10, then, it'd be hard to pass and hard to trade back. But if all those guys are off the board and your 10th rated player is not too much different than your 20th rated player, then you can entertain some offers and think about maybe moving back and playing around with the draft. Because the draft is all about value, maximizing each pick according to your board. And so I think there will be some very talented players there at number 10, looking at pass rushers like Shaq Lawson or the cornerback position, the linebackers. And I think pass rush is the main thing there. Is there a pass rusher that they feel is worthy of the 10th pick? And if there's not, how far do they feel comfortable trading back to still get an impact player while still maximizing the pick?
Like, for example, Noah Spence, for example. We spent a lot of time talking to Steve about him. Some feel the best, you know, pure pass rusher that's coming out, but because of all his off-the-field issues, might drop.
Heavy baggage, and he's a wild card because his draft stock, where he ends up, will come down to how comfortable they are with the baggage. And I give Noah a lot of credit because he had all the issues at Ohio State. He was banned from the Big Ten. But he thought about entering the draft last year and saying, you know what, I'll just take my chances. I'll be a fifth-round pick, whatever. He didn't. He decided to go to Eastern Kentucky, and he told the coaches, hey, drug test me every day. And he passed over a dozen drug tests. And, you know, the coaches speak very highly of the way he handled himself at Eastern Kentucky. So he kind of rebuilt his image, rebuilt that draft stock. And because of that, now he has a chance to go first round. Where he ends up, it's anyone's guess because he is such a wild card. It depends on how comfortable teams are with the baggage and, you know, who he was then, who he is now, and then who he'll be once he's starting to get million-dollar paychecks. And, you know, and he doesn't have maybe that as strong support system that are watching over him at all times. Can they trust him off the field? So you're absolutely right. He is the best pure pass rusher, but he also has some issues on the field as a run defender. Not the biggest guy, not the longest guy. So I think he's better in a 3-4. Let him play in space. But nonetheless, he's the best pure pass rusher in this group. So, you know, you need to have that conversation because if he's there at 10, he's at least worth talking about. Is he worth the risk there?
And in your most recent mock draft on CBS Sports, Dane Brugler joins us. You haven't been going at 8 to the Dolphins. And
right.
By the way, God bless all the mock drafts they make you do. I don't know how you do them. You're doing, like, seems like once every week. It can't be easy. You have Shaq Lawson, the guy you mentioned, going to the Giants at number 10. Why do you think he's a good fit for what the Giants like to do and would be a logical selection for the Giants?
It's all about disruption and what can you do off the edge and bring that pass rush. And so with Shaq Lawson, led the nation in tackles for loss this year, and he's not just that. You know, Noah Spence, he's a pass rusher, not so much against the run. Shaq Lawson is equally effective rushing the passer and against the run because of his strength, his understanding of leverage. He has that pass rush savvy that you want. So I think with Shaq Lawson, you might not be getting that that twitchy, long rusher who's just, you know, that Jason Pierre-Paul, basically,
right,
who's going to be able to bend the edge with ease. But he's still able to be effective because he understands what he does well. And, you know, one of the best tackles in this group, Ronnie Stanley from Notre Dame, watching that tape, Notre Dame versus Clemson, watching Shaq Lawson go up against Ronnie Stanley. And a lot of times, Shaq Lawson won that one-on-one battle.
Wow.
And so Shaq Lawson knows how to beat single blocks and disrupt what's going on in the pocket. So it's all about disruption. That's the name of the game. And so if you can get into the pocket and make something happen, then you know, you're going to have a career in the NFL for a long time.
You mentioned Spence. You mentioned Lawson. Any other defensive linemen that you think could be in the mix at 10 that fit the 4-3 defense? And we talked about DeForest Buckner earlier, probably more of a 3-4 defensive end type. Anybody else that you think would fit into the 4-3, whether an end or a 3 technique, whatever, that would make sense for the Giants at 10?
Well, I think Sheldon Rankins, the Louisville defensive tackle, he's a disruptive 3 technique. You know, we talk about the pressure off the edges. If you can create that interior pressure, that creates so much havoc for the pocket and what the offense wants to do. So I think Sheldon Rankins could be that type of player. He's going to go probably somewhere in the teens. So at number 10, I think, you know, he could be in the discussion there. Shaq Lawson's teammate, Kevin Dodd, he's another defensive end who...
Wasn't he second in the nation in tackles for loss?
Was,
which is
was.
Amazing. You wonder why Clemson was so good this year, huh?
Right. And
23.5.
23.5. And a bulk of that, I think 8.5 came in the last two games against Oklahoma and against Alabama. He really finished strong. And it's interesting because both Dodd and Lawson, they didn't start until this year. They were stuck on the depth chart behind Vic Beasley and Corey Crawford. But they had the opportunity to start, and they took advantage of it, especially Dodd, who really it was kind of a relative unknown coming into the year. We saw him get better with every game, every snap, and so you know we saw it definitely at the end of the season. He didn't even earn any ACC honors. You know, he didn't earn second team all honorable mention because he was so quiet opposite Shaq Lawson, but he was quietly productive. And so I think we're going to see Kevin Dodd maybe inch up the boards. Because a lot of teams that I talk to think his best football is ahead of him. He's just scratching the surface of how good he can be.
You've got a lot of Giants fans that are obviously watching this show right now. Let's take you back to last year in regard to Ereck Flowers and the Giants drafting him. What were your thoughts of him coming into the combine, coming into the draft, and now that you've had a year to see him start at left tackle for the Giants, what are your thoughts? Were you spot on? Were you way off? What did you evaluate him as?
I think it was kind of what we expected, where he's obviously talented, but it's just there's going to be a learning curve for him. And I think we saw that his rookie season. A big kid who can move. But he has a lot of tools, but in terms of translating those tools to on-field production, there's kind of a gap there. And that's what he needs to figure out, is how to best use his strengths to be effective as a left tackle in this league. So I think it's a bright future. I think his upside is still not realized. I don't think we know how good he can be just yet. Year two will tell us a lot in terms of his development and what kind of player he's going to be moving forward. But I think coming into the combine last year, we saw a possible mid-first rounder with a lot of ability, and I think that's the Giants saw something similar. That's why they took him top 10. And moving forward, I think they understood he's not going to be a pick that might necessarily pay off in year one. But when we look back 3 years from now, we'll be happy we took him.
And Landon Collins.
Right. A lot of people thought could be the top safety last year. Safety position is growing more and more of an importance, with different tight ends and different offensive packages, more wide receivers on the field. And so the ability to get a Landon Collins who, can stay on the field for every down, give you a little bit in pass coverage, but really be an impact run defender, it's good value in the second round. And so I think that's what they found. And we're going to see it this year with safeties because it seems like the safety class every past few years has not been a strong group, and so we're going to see these safeties go earlier and earlier because the teams have such a need for them. And I think we saw that with Landon Collins last year, but nonetheless, he's a good player who I think is going to start in this league for a long time.
Miles Jack, you mentioned you think he's an elite guy, so if he's there at 10, that's someone the Giants can jump at. How about a guy like Jalen Smith? He's coming off the knee.
Right.
His tape as good, if not better, than Miles Jack in his time in college.
Right.
Probably a weak side linebacker in the 4-3. What kind of feel do you think these teams will have for his medical when they have to make the decision on when to pick him? And, we saw Todd Gurley still go fairly high last year, even
right.
with that type of injury. How do you see this thing breaking down for Jalen Smith?
Well, you feel so bad for Jalen. He's a player who started every game in his career.
He could have been a top five pick.
Yeah, started every game in his career, and then just happened to be in his final game, not only the ACL but also his LCL. So it's a little different with Gurley, because Gurley was an ACL. It was a clean tear, easy to repair and get in the rehab. With Jalen, it's a little more complicated. And so I think teams are going to get a better idea for his rehab here at the combine. But really, it's March and April, the combine rechecks, when teams will have a chance to see an updated rehab recovery, see how the knee's responding to everything they've been putting it through. That will really tell us where Jalen Smith's going to go. And even if he is, has to take a redshirt year as a rookie, we're still going to see him in the first round because he's that good of a player, and a team will take a chance on him and hope that he's able to stay healthy moving forward. They just might have to take a redshirt year for him. But he is that good where he's still going to be in the first round.
Dane, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for being a part of the show. You're loyal to us all
year
round, and we'll talk to you after the combine and see what you thought.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Dane Brugler, CBS Sports, thank you for joining us. We'll be back with more on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine, and the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine, Friday through Monday, only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine, and the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine, Friday through Monday, only on NFL Network.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmoke, Anita Marks, live from the Combine in Indianapolis. We welcome in our next guest from the NFL Network. Of course, you recognize the great Kim Jones. Kim,
hey,
thanks for being with us.
Anita and
so
John
nice
Schmoke,
to have more estrogen on the show.
John was just thinking that.
We don't have enough of that.
I'm outnumbered.
It's
very uncomfortable.
It's always dudes.
All right, Kim. You like to have your nose close to the pavement, sniffing things out at the combine. I know it's early in the week, obviously.
Yes.
And a lot of things happen here that fans don't see in the, you know, on the practice field doing
right.
the workouts. What are you hearing? What's the scoop?
I think the quarterback position, listen, it's always about the quarterback position here. Always, always, always. But unlike last year when it was about Winston and Mariota, this time it's about, you could argue, certainly at least four guys, maybe as many as six. And I know there's a top group right now, and Jared Goff is at the top of that for now and may stay there. But I'm talking to evaluators, coaches, GMs, front office people who are all saying, yes, a Christian Hackenberg could have a great workout and help to elevate himself. They saw him do it as a rookie. I always do that. As a freshman at Penn State, they saw him have two poor seasons after Bill O'Brien left. So I do think there's going to be drama on Saturday as we see Carson Wentz and we get to evaluate him next to Paxton Lynch, next to Jared Goff, next to Cook and Prescott and a couple others who could elevate. Hackenberg, of course. So
Kim loves their Nittany Lions.
I do. But
and also, I heard he's a really, really, really fantastic kid.
He's every tool in the toolbox you would want out of a quarterback physically.
I'm not feeding these guys answers when I talk to them. They're all saying, a head coach just said to me that almost nothing can change his mind about quarterbacks at the combine. I mentioned Hackenberg, and he literally said, and you just mentioned one who could. So a guy who thinks his evaluation of quarterbacks is so complete already that he thinks he knows what he knows, admitted, wait a minute, oh yeah, Hackenberg could change my mind.
And I'll tell you what, I've heard some people say third day.
Yep.
I've heard some people say top of the second round based on tools. So you're right.
Yes.
That's one of those guys where the drills today are really going to have a big impact.
You know what's interesting? You know, obviously you work for the NFL Network. You cover all the NFL, but you specialize with Giants and Jets.
Yes.
And the Giants and Giants fans really haven't, in a long time, thank you very much, Eli Manning, haven't been in a position where they've had to really think quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. But the Jets, even though, yes, there's all this talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick, that's something with the Jets. But my goodness, I don't think Giants fans really, maybe they do, maybe some don't, but I don't think they know how blessed they are that they don't have to worry about that.
Well, here's the best point that I think follows your terrific point, Anita, is this. Ryan Nassib, by some folks in our media profession, consider him one of the Giants' lost draft picks of the past years gone by, okay? Ryan Nassib is exactly what Jerry Reese said he hoped he would be when he was drafted.
A capable backup, but he doesn't have to play.
And they don't have to rely
exactly,
on him.
Exactly, right.
He has been a success story. Now, Ryan Nassib, I'm sure, would like an opportunity to do more.
Of course.
I get that. Every competitor would. Mm-hmm. But when you look at that, he was a pick at that point that they felt like they could not pass up because of the value, and yet his value has been in, if anything, it's been in the fact that they've kept two quarterbacks now, that they feel confident enough in him over the last few years to keep two, but he's done exactly what they've wanted. That's how Eli has stabilized that position for years and years and years. His backup is perfect. And he's a great former draft pick, in my opinion, because he's not asked to do a whole lot except the scout team.
Ladies, real quick, this is how things have changed.
Who is that?
Around that, inside that throng of media,
is that Gettleman?
Is the great Dave Gettleman.
Yeah. He just said, by the way, if they don't work out a long-term deal with Josh Norman, they could franchise him. Now, I don't think that, Mike Westhoff in the house, I don't think that's a lot of news.
No, I don't think you're breaking any news right there either. No,
I don't think
he.
I mean, he was born there. He played Pop Warner, Pee Wee, high school, college. I don't think he's leaving Carolina, but that's just my take. But this is a conversation we had with Paul Schwartz not too long ago, and that is, you know, around the NFL, Nassib, even though hasn't had a lot of playing time, word on the street is that this is a guy that a lot of people are anticipating to bring in to compete for a starting job at some point in time. If, of course, he doesn't work out a deal with the Giants and continues to be a backup. But who in their right mind wants to continue to be a backup? Not me. I don't. You play this game because you want to start. You want to play.
Absolutely.
So that's going to be a very, in my opinion, a very interesting dynamic when his contract is up. And the Giants, of course, hoping that he's the next heir apparent. But what if he's not on this roster? Because the time frame doesn't fit, of course, Eli Manning with the next 3 to 5 years. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know what Nassib's future holds, but I will continue to defend that pick. And it should be counted
absolutely
among the successful draft picks of the last few years.
I'm with you, Kim.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kim, as the Giants begin to look now at this draft, first they have to get through free agency and take care of some of their own business with some of their own players that are hitting the free agent market. You've spent a lot of time around Jason Pierre-Paul, Prince Amukamara, Robert Ayers. What's your feel for these guys? What's the market going to be like for them? So many teams have so much money to spend. You know, how quickly do you have to move? How do you see this whole free agent market, you know, kind of playing out, starting, of course, with teams making the decisions you just mentioned, who to franchise?
Well, you, the two of you can remember these days as well, because they're not that far in our past, the times when free agency would start and the Giants were renegotiating Chris Snee's contract to get under the salary cap and maybe Eli's as well, and we're saying, well, we're going to be players in free agency, but not this initial swirl. Well, now they can be in it initially.
Oh, absolutely.
And they likely have to be in it initially for the players for whom they have great conviction. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. To me, and it's a no-brainer, the Jason Pierre-Paul market, that's why I do JPP. The JPP market, to me, is perhaps among the most interesting
it's
of any
fascinating.
Free because you certainly saw the skills, the explosiveness. I mean, in that Jets game, he dominated Bruno Giacomini to the point where afterwards, Giacomini said, I couldn't handle him off the line today, and just admitted it in the locker room. Now, it's easier to admit after you've won the game, but... You know, but what do you do about the fact that he's had the second surgery on the index, or excuse me, the middle finger?
Can he tackle?
Get rid of some of that scar tissue, hopefully gets into a regular glove. He's getting there. You look at Robert Ayers' production. It increased when Jason came back. Now, Ayers also got healthy. But it there is a direct correlation to JPP
absolutely.
On the field and Robert Ayers getting
you saw a sack total
in the games. Absolutely.
Big
so
time.
I'm not sure what you do. I have to believe what John Mara said, and that's that they will have interest at the right price. The question is, does someone offer him a buck or two more? And if you're Jason Pierre-Paul at this point, do you have to take the highest guaranteed money given his situation? Obviously, it changed a great deal on July 4th.
And there's so much money out there to play with for a number of teams that, you know, and this is what the players wanted when they renegotiated the collective bargaining agreement. But there's so much money out there that teams are going to overpay for certain players. But one thing that we've seen in years past, the Giants have a ballpark, a number for their players. Are they willing to kind of change that philosophy this year? I don't know.
Yeah, it is. I think with Jason, though, I do think there are still question marks. He came back and proved he could be a viable player.
Absolutely.
He wasn't a viable finisher of plays, though. And that's where those pass rushers make their money. Yes, putting pressure on. But just pressuring Tom Brady or pressuring Cam Newton wasn't going to get it done. We saw the Denver Broncos hit those guys time and time and time again. I believe they hit Cam 13 times. And by NFL Network counts, I know I saw higher counts elsewhere. I think they hit Tom 18.
Yeah.
I know other places had it over 20, but ours was 18, I believe. But those are the plays that count. He wasn't able to finish some of those plays.
Yeah, a lot of tackles I think that he could have gotten for loss of yardage, he couldn't finish those. He had the opportunity to do so, but I guess maybe because of the club hand, he could not. What about Prince? I think that's another intriguing one in regard to what the market you think is going to bear for Prince.
Yeah.
Because there aren't a ton of corners out there.
No, they're not. Excuse me one second, guys. Sorry about that. The thing about Prince, I remember, as you probably do in training camp, he wanted to play 16 games.
Yeah, that was his big goal, you're right.
And I almost thought when he left that San Francisco game that he played through, but you kind of knew after that game it was going to be a while till we saw him again, and it was a long time, and they missed him. You look back at those games, there was a play or two here or there in the pass game, defensive pass game, that they couldn't handle, and they perhaps would have had Prince been on the field, but... My sense, and it's not from talking to Prince, it's just my sense from observing, I think realizing he was going to miss a chunk of time really weighed on him. He wasn't the same player when he came back. And it's one thing to set a goal, but then to not reach it in, you know, what, the beginning of October? Because that San Francisco game was, what, fairly early in October?
It was, yes.
So your goal to play 16 games is now gone. He came back, I think, putting a lot of pressure on himself, I think believing he had to play a certain way, and he didn't have a great end to the season. But will there be money out there for him? Yes. There will be, and something tells me the Giants in that case will not be the highest bidder.
How fast is this free agent market going to go off the bat? I mean, like you mentioned, there's a lot of teams with money.
Yeah.
The cap continues to go up. Now they're seeing it might go up even more than they thought initially.
Right, a couple million more.
Yeah. So if you want some of these premium guys, you're going to have to move pretty quick, right?
Here's what I do not know, and I don't know right now if it's knowable. Mm-hmm. And if you had Jerry Reese sitting here, maybe it's knowable.
Right.
With me, it's not, and I'm sorry about that. What I don't know is the Giants,
we don't know a whole lot either. Don't worry, Ken.
The Giants can certainly identify the positions of need.
Right.
And I don't think that's particularly hard on most teams. I don't think it's a very hard chore with the New York Giants. And I assume a Jonathan Hankins, for example, is going to come back and play at a high level.
Yeah, that's one of the guys on defense, you know, all right,
right.
He's going to be a starter.
Torn pec does not usually change that.
No.
It's not a leg injury. It's not a shoulder. It's something that's repairable and he can come back. Mm-hmm. So I build him into the plan when I think about their needs on the defensive line. But what I don't know is, are the Giants going into free agency saying, we need one of these two guys? Or the Giants going into free agency saying, we need to fill these positions, and perhaps they're not as anxious or as immediate as we and some fans would want them to be. That's what I'm not sure about their philosophy. If they've identified a player or two who becomes a difference maker, or if they have enough needs where they can sort of move through positions and find the best fit fairly early in free agency. I don't know that, but there's no doubt they're going to have to work with conviction.
One thing that does hold true when it comes to the Giants, and that is, you know, they don't want to go into the draft with a need.
Well, they're gonna though,
right? Because there's so many needs. You're right. They will.
Yeah.
But I know that's one of the things that they try to like to avoid. They don't want, because their philosophy is best player on the board, and they don't want to have that. We really need.
Well,
this.
They didn't take their best player on the board last year. They took their best player on the board at a position of need in Eric Flowers. And even though he did not have a fantastic season and it did look like he wore down, he proved a couple things. He's tough as can be. You know, here's a giant of a man playing through a high ankle sprains. Little bitty guys don't play through high ankle sprains. I mean, he is as tough as they come.
And he demanded to play.
Right, and you have to believe last year was a great learning experience. But I suspect they will go into the position with certain areas not of need. Let me put it this way. I don't think you can go into the draft with safety as a position of need. I think Landon Collins needs a veteran next to him.
Yeah, I mean, they already have a lot of young players on the roster, whether it's Nat Burhey or Cooper Taylor, guys like that.
Right.
How do you think Ben McAdoo is going to handle his first, you know, big time outside of the building press conference on the national scene in about half an hour?
Yeah, I think 20 minutes.
I bet it'll be great. I think he'll be fine. It'll be a lot of questions from the New York media, a lot of Giants. The one thing about this, when you sit in these press conferences and want to ask a couple combine questions,
right.
The beat writers from that respective team almost don't let you in.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
So Ben will do fine.
Kim, we appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
The rest of your week, and we'll see you later.
Thank you very much.
That's Kim Jones, Anita Marks, John Schmalk. We'll take a quick break. Roman Oben joins us next on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine, and the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine, Friday through Monday, only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine, and the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine, Friday through Monday, only on NFL Network.
We are back from Indianapolis. John Schmelk, Anita Marks, and you know that guy used to be a co-host of Big Blue Kickoff Live. That's Roman Oben, former Giants offensive lineman, now big wig over at the National Football League.
You're a suit, man.
I wouldn't say big wig. See, I took the suit off and put on something more casual.
I'm dressed down today.
How are we doing, guys?
Great.
Doing great, Rome. How are you? Okay, here's what we want from you today. You're the only, at least today, ex-player we're talking to.
Okay.
What's the combine like for a player? Is it a little uncomfortable? Is it a little weird? What is it like?
I just think it's become more of a circus in terms of what the players do before leading up to it. You see what the media requirements are now, especially the higher round picks. But the bottom line is, if you can't get through this, you may not be able to do well on 3rd and 10, especially as an offensive lineman.
So you think this is a good test for what comes later?
It's a psychological test, obviously, but it's one layer. There's the layer here, then there's a layer, obviously, the you know, they did the All-Star games and all that. Mm-hmm. You've got to run and test well. That can hurt you, or it can definitely help you. So there's different participatory layers. This is definitely one big one.
Also, I'm hearing when you talk to a number of the guys, is the pressure. They're going to bed. They're having to wake up at like 4:15 in the morning. You know, all kinds of physicals, questions, meeting with head coaches, and then, as you said, performing. That the pressure that they experience here is unlike anything they've experienced in their life.
Well, it gives clubs and club personnel, coaching staff, a chance to kind of bring the color, the people they've been watching on film and been evaluating. And now you can sit with the head coach and say, look, am I going to spend my 10th round pick on this guy? Is this guy a mid-round guy? What kind of person is he? What can I find out about him in this 10-15 minute span when you do these interviews? So it's a very important part. And again, as a player, you have to say, if you can't deal with this pressure, it's nothing compared to 80,000 people and you got to block, you know, a Pro Bowler on third down.
I feel like these days, Roman, some of these players go through almost Olympic style preparation for
right.
these events. They
Absolutely.
Get sprint coaches, they get jump coaches, they get psychological coaches, they get everything you can imagine.
Yeah.
What did you have when you went to the combine back in the day? How many coaches did you have getting you ready for this? Or did you go have like In-N-Out Burger right the night before you ran?
It's funny. I never forget. Me and Pete Kendall, who's an offensive lineman,
yeah,
played a long
of course.
Time. Mm-hmm. We were both right around that 299, 300 pound mark. So I remember going to the back room in one of the banquet rooms and just chugging like 5 pitchers of water before we got on that scale so we can weigh in at like 305.
Because the scouts want you over 300,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because you had to be over 300. And we played in systems that was similar to what, you know, like the Broncos kind of did. A lot of tosses and screens. So our O-linemen at Louisville were very athletic, speaking of myself included in that group. But, no, that's what I remember. But we didn't – I think for 2 weeks I worked on starts with the college track
it.
Coach on my 40. And then that was it. Nothing was on TV. You knew that you were going to do O-line type of drills. You just didn't want – you want to get loose enough not to pull anything. You know, we played along. We didn't have a bowl game, so I had like a month to get ready, then another month between the Senior Bowl and all that stuff. So it's really about managing your time during that period.
They're saying that what would be best for the offensive lineman, instead of an offensive lineman running a 40-yard dash, because let's face it, how often do you do that, right? Pull,
unless you chase an interception or something. hopefully not a lot.
Yeah. But really, the first five to ten yards is
yeah.
really what they're looking at.
Yeah.
Do you feel that some of the tests need to be changed pending on the positional players?
Well, it definitely needs to be more position-specific. Some measures like the 40 are weighed differently for DBs and receivers, running backs versus linemen. But again, they'll say, I think I ran a 5:09.
You couldn't break the 5-second barrier.
No, I couldn't. I ran like a 5:09.
That's still impressive.
No, that's
and
very
then,
good.
But then it was like his 10 time was, and this is what his 20 was. Mm. So
the splits.
Yeah, those were also weighed in as a subset of like what those times were. But again, it's shuffle 5, shuffle back, sprint. I mean, are they going to start timing that? I think they should. But again, you've got to be able to move someone from point A to point B against his will, create holes for running back, block for the quarterback, and this is just a part of that.
We only have about 3 more minutes with you, Roman. Look at the Giants. Obviously, we know about their needs this offseason. In your opinion, what are the most important things for the Giants to do, whether it's in the draft or free agency, the things that you believe are essential for them to fix to get the team back in the playoffs?
Well, you've got to make sure that you can manage the expectations of what these guys are worth on the street, and you've got some guys on defense that there's some question. Obviously, JPP, Prince, Ayers. There's one more guy I'm missing that's a major free agent.
Those are the 3 major ones
yeah,
on defense.
Guys,
you got them.
Yeah, so
you got them.
Now, is someone out there on another team, a guy going to come in? I mean, would you like to see another John Beeson out there? But more productivity than Beeson gave you the last 3 years? I know Denver's got a good one. The Rams have a good linebacker. I mean, so.
Yeah, Laurinaitis was let go.
Yeah, so you've got some guys out there, but what are they worth? And I think one thing the Giants have always done is they determine what they feel a guy's worth, and that's it. And if you're a dollar over that, then you leave. And if it works within that scheme or that number, those parameters, then you continue. So I'd like to see Ayers and Prince, and I'd like to see JPP come back, and hopefully what he's doing with his hands and is going to improve him this year. But you got to solve some things defensively because you have to stop throwing. You got to get guys off the field on third down.
Really quick, I know that we only have a short amount of time, but your thought on Flowers, and how do you see this offensive line panning out for the Giants this season? Free agency, draft, what would you like to see them do?
I mean, similar to Pugh, what he did as a rookie, it was impressive this, to have him play and compete. He was tough. He wants to win. You have to say, if there's another left tackle, or do you move him to the right, or if there's one more move that needs to be made, that's going to be based on who's better out there.
Where do you think he fits better, right tackle or left tackle?
I think he's a great right tackle, but he can fight and get better at left. So, again, that determines who's better at left. That's going to be – obviously, he started because Beatty was injured. Now Beatty's gone. Now, where's the future of Ed Flowers for the next 10 years, not just plugging in because a guy got injured?
Final question for me. Ben McAdoo's new Giants head coach. Obviously, that's a big change they made. Your impressions, we even talked to you since the move. How do you think he's going to handle it? And what do you think Ben McAdoo is the next head coach of the New York Giants?
I think when I spoke to him when he first got the job at the OC, I chased him down. It was like that fourth preseason game. I was on the phone with him for 10 minutes.
He must have been running real fast from you.
No, but I think he appreciated talking to a foreign player, because I asked him the questions about establishing an identity. And I think what he wants to do is to continue to establish the identity of the team,
right,
specifically offensively. And I think as he grows into the role, he'll be a better administrator, better head coach. Continue the maintenance of Eli and improvements. I mean, I think the football person in me is going to say, you really got 4 more years to get Eli Manning back to the Super Bowl? And then it's, you know, he gets older and that whole discussion starts. But I think you got to build good teams around him. You got to build good solid line, good running game, good perimeter, good defense, so he's not having to win the whole game. And you've seen what happened prior is when Eli Manning tried to do everything versus when he really focused on the things they needed to become a better quarterback. That's when he improved, which he did under McAdoo the last 2 years, and probably why he's the head coach of the Giants right now.
Roman, great stuff. We appreciate it. Anita, excellent job on the show today. Fantastic. We had a good time. We'll have more of the same the next couple of days right here from the Combine in Indianapolis. A ton of guests, and of course, we start having guys do some activities tomorrow, so we could talk about that as well. Tune in. Noon to 2. Big Blue Cookoff live on Giants.com. We're signing off from Indy. Stay tuned to Giants.com at 2 o'clock. Ben McAdoo will be live from the podium here in Indianapolis, here from the Giants head coach. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great one.
This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Hit me on the line and drop.
Bang.
The pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
Highlight of the jump ball. Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.